Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. This satsang program is for Saturday, July the 18th, 2015. And I'm very grateful that you're here with me to listen. I've traveled many lifetimes to be with you, and you with me, and our little union here is by no accident. And I hope that you find some kind of insight into everything that is being offered here on our program. It's very, very important. I want to remind you that this program, this satsang, is offered to you by the sponsors of Aspire who make all of this possible. Without their sponsorship, you would not be listening to this program at all. You would not be experiencing anything on our website, our TV programs, nothing. So it is very, very important that you, well, hopefully will decide to help us. Our mystery donor has paid for the year, and we're trying to raise more interest, shall we say, in sponsorship so this program can continue. And I hope that you will eventually become a sponsor and help us, because everything we do, everything we do is about keeping the program on the air to serve humankind in a different way, a way that most people just, you know, don't get. This is for those who are seeking something beyond what their minds can think and their egos can grasp. Today, we are going to talk about, I picked three questions that people have sent me, and I want to thank my three questioneers, as it were. It's all about skepticism, I'll get it out, skepticism today. Why we're skeptical and what we're skeptical about and that whole thing. And I just think that skepticism plays a very big role in the lives of most of us. So here we go. Hopefully I'll be able to serve the people that that wrote me and maybe those of you who are listening. First question, is there really a God, Greg? Doesn't seem so to me. This is from Rachel. You never speak of God. What up? What up? I love that. Oh, gosh. Our lingo today. Well, I don't speak of God, do I? I wonder why. Maybe it's because it is unnecessary. Absolutely unnecessary. We live in a universe that does not need to have nouns and pronouns or any other word put to it. I have a hard time with this thing that people call God, because the minute you say it, it becomes a concept. It isn't something that is authentic. It isn't something beautiful. It isn't something sustainable through compassion and love. It just isn't. It's a concept. God is not a concept. God is not a belief. It has nothing to do with belief or concept or anything like that. It has to do with something beyond what I can think. So, if I give you a concept, if I say to you, here is the concept of God, and you buy into it because it makes logical sense to you, I have taken away the very meaning of what it is to know that which exists beyond what we can think, believe, and conceptualize in our brain. Now, this is a very important thing I just said to you. For me, in the beginning of my life, I needed to understand what this thing called God was. Everyone was talking about it, but I had no idea what it was. Then as I became a little older, maybe in my I think it was about 8 or 9 years old, it became extremely important for me to understand, because I could not put together myself with anyone else in my family. And it was very hard for me to understand the whole idea of why people get old and what they were struggling with and that whole thing. So I went through a series of very difficult times trying to understand the nature of who's in charge here. That's really all it was for me when I was younger. And of course, went to different churches when I was little. I didn't like church. I still don't. Went to Unity, grew up in it, liked it because there was no dogma. It was open-ended, supposedly speaking, and that the people there were open-ended. They were looking at things from a different point of view. What I didn't understand, Rachel, at the time, of course, was that certain things were being put into place according to my karma for me to be able to sit here and talk to you some, 50 years later? To sit and talk to you about this on the radio 50 years later. I remember certain seminars and things that were happening at the little church we were at when I was younger in San Diego, the Dead Sea Scrolls, the what is now known as the Gnostic Gospels was being presented. A whole new point of view about life was being presented, and a new sense of what maybe Jesus really was. All this was being put in place when I was younger. I had no idea, but I was very interested, and I paid attention, and I listened, and blah, blah, and eventually came into this thing that I'm doing now. I had to go through many phases. I never could understand this God thing, especially when you look at it from the point of view of Genesis. Makes absolutely no coherent sense at all, but only to the pedestrian mentality that needs to understand or believe they understand who's in charge here. And that's not what our life is all about who's in charge. That's such a joke. That's so foolish. It isn't about being in charge. Let me tell you something, and I'll try to explain this as simply as I possibly can. You and I are in an evolutionary process. You can call it God. I have no problem with that. You can call it whatever you want. But it doesn't really matter what you call it. What is important is understanding that we must submit ourselves to it, this process. The process is to life as love. It is not about who is in charge here. We are in an evolutionary process. This process goes on and on and on with or without our permission. And we can do it any way we want to do it. You can sit in a church, and that is fine. You can sit and listen to people who are proclaiming what life is all about, and that would be fine. And you can accept what they say or not, and that would be fine. There isn't anything here keeping you from the way. Now, whatever it is that floats your boat based on emotionality will be a deterrent to what is truly happening around us as that process. And if you need to have that deterrent, if you need to believe in something, and I hear people tell me this all the time, this is why I'm saying it to you. They tell me, Greg, I have to believe in something. I can't just cast my fate to the wind. Okay, that is fine. That is, you do what you need to do. It just makes it longer and more arduous a journey, but that is in our hands too. There is nothing wrong with having a long and arduous journey. If that's what I need, that's what I need. If that's what it's all about for me, that's what it's all about for me. And frankly speaking, I think that's what it's all about for all of us. Everything has to coincide with our ego, our mental concepts, our ability to comprehend, our cognitive understanding. It all has to do with what I can grasp mentally. But you see, there is another part of us. And it's not about mental. It's not about emotional. It is about the spiritual. And it lives in all of us and haunts our lives in many different ways that we simply do not understand. We don't comprehend it. And because we don't comprehend it, it is what it is, what it is. When I am done trying to comprehend who's in charge here and how did this all happen, and I let go of the superstitions of religious belief and theory, then I come into something where I can have that, which is called the direct experience, Rachel. And that's what I'm after. That's what I've had. And that's what I will have more and more and more. You can have it too. But you have to understand, if you have the direct experience, it's going to screw up your ecosystem. The way you think, the way you live, the people you live with, it affects everything. And people don't want that, so they're content to have the God that supplants them in all sorts of comforts and securities that make them feel good about just living a good life, getting through this mess, and dying and going and living with your ancestors in some place called heaven. If that makes sense to you, that makes sense to you. I am not here to change you in any way, shape, or form. But since you asked, I don't really see that as being the way, and it never has been for me. And I don't talk about God, because the minute you say the word, it's all done and over. People think they know. They don't know. I don't know. None of us knows. In our brain, the only place we know is in our silence. In the depth of our silence, it is only there that everything comes together as love. And it is all about love. I could go on and on, but I won't. I hope that clarifies the matter, Rachel. And I'm really grateful that you enjoy the satsangs that we offer here. Your kind words were really deeply appreciated. Please forgive me. Namaste. There's so much assumption around the word God, assumption about those who teach like me, what we're supposed to be like, how we're supposed to act, how we're supposed to think, that whole thing. People have a lot of assumptions. None of them are correct. They're all social assumptions. And God is another one of those social assumptions that we have that we like to get involved in and make us believe that we are believers when it has nothing to do with any of that kind of horse manure. Next one comes from Stuart, and he does not tell me where he lives. How do I know if meditation brings enlightenment? I'm very skeptical of all of this, Stuart. Stuart, I am not peddling meditation. I am not trying to sell you on the idea of it. So if you need proof, then you're in the wrong pew here, and you need to go and stay out of meditation until it's time for you to be in meditation. And that's going to be a long time based on what you've said here. You have to understand something. Lhasa said in the Tao Te Ching, wear out and become new. I love that statement. You're not worn out enough yet. You haven't had enough pain, sorrow, whatever, disappointment, whatever. You haven't had enough to discourage you from putting your hand on the oven door that's hot. You just haven't had enough experience in it. You have to come to a point where you're worn out, where you realize, I can't do this one more time. How many times do I have to do this before I get it? Before I truly understand what the heck is going on within me? You have to be absolutely worn out by the whole thing of how you and I choose to live. So, until you're worn out, until you're sick of your own sickness, you're not going to meditate. Now, a lot of people try to meditate when they're not really ready to meditate. They are still in their mischief. They still enjoy it. They like to do their little mischievous things, whatever that is for that particular person. It could be lots of things like hate and fear and gossip and resentment and vengeance, pride, vanity. It could be a lot of different things. It's what people do. And they don't want that disturbed because they like that self-righteousness, the right to have all that stuff in their life. So meditation, when you say to somebody, this is the way, or you'll benefit by meditation. I'll never forget the NPR broadcast I heard many years ago about meditation and how it's supposed to benefit you and how important it is. And they were trying to coerce their audience to accept meditation and maybe even come into it. And it was done by some Zen people in, I think it was back in New York or Maine or something. And that was what it was all about. You know, it's legitimate. It's okay. It'll help you. You'll be able to think clear and make more money and understand your family better and all that. And that is just horse manure, just pure horse manure. Meditation done through the human is arduous. It's painful. It's time consuming. It's costly. It alienates you from people. People, you know, what do? I meditate. I went to a retreat, meditate. My students will tell me this story, and I love these stories, and they love them too. They just crack up. People will say to them, oh, how was your vacation? Oh, I was at a meditation retreat. Oh, you must feel so relaxed. You must feel like, you know, you're light now. And you did you get massages? Did you da-da-da-da-da-da? And that's what they think. That's really what they think. Over and over and over again. People don't get meditation. If you don't get it, you don't get it. And there is nothing I or anyone else could say to help you understand. It's not something that you get like a commodity. It's something that you're drawn to as a reality. And if you're drawn to it, you will be instantly at home with it. And whatever it is that you have to go through to sustain the meditation, you will go through to sustain it. That's it. The price won't be too high. The practice won't be too arduous. The compassion level of it all will be not looking like an emotional or egotistical self-defeat. It will be a loving gift. It will be something you actually do beyond enjoyment or trying to enjoy it or trying to not enjoy it. You'll do it because you can. The mind is always looking for benefits for whatever it wants to do or thinks it should do. It's always looking for some reason to be benefited. And that's just not the way. So, you know, Stuart, I'm not here to tell you, you should meditate. And if you don't meditate, you're a loser. You know, you don't need me to tell you that. And it just isn't the truth. Meditation arrives in your life when you are arriving at a certain place in your living where you are sick of your sickness. The reason meditation is not real popular anymore is because it requires time and energy and resources. It requires commitment, and it doesn't promise a single thing back. It doesn't promise your car will be shinier, your wallet will be thicker, that people will like you, and that things in the world, circumstances and conditions, will work out for you. It doesn't require, it doesn't tell you that, it isn't the end result, blah, 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 blah. There is no promise. And so the pedestrian mentality, the conventional thinking is, well, if you got nothing to promise me, I ain't doing it. And it's just a sham. And that, in a way, is kind of a cool thing because, in my opinion, keeps the riffraff out. That's the way it is. You lower my spiritual property values by being in my practice. So anyway, I say that tongue in cheek. Nothing I can say to you. Stuart, when you're ready, you'll do it. And until then, don't do it. Henny Youngman, great joke. Very big truth. Please forgive me. Namaste. The American public. Aive, aive. Last one comes from Ron, Sacramento. He listens to us from Sacramento. I love it when people tell me where they are. Seems to me that we really can't know who we are. That we really can't know what we are. It seems to me that we really don't care about who we are. What do you say, Ron? I'd agree with you, Ron. I don't think people care about who they are. People's idea of themselves comes from what other people tell them about themselves. So people believe their own press and they think that's what it's all about. And anything I would say to the contrary of what people say about you or whatever would seem absurd or wrong or whatever. And so we don't know ourselves, but we're not interested in knowing ourselves. We just want to know our tendencies. We want to know what we can get, how we can get it, and what our tendencies are, maybe our ability to fashion this after that and get this over that. And it's a big hodgepodge. How does a person know who they are? Well, you're not going to know who you are by what you believe in. You're not going to know who you are by adopting some religious philosophy or metaphysical premise. You're not going to know who you are. Who you are is a direct experience. And if you don't have that direct experience, there is nothing anyone can do to give it to you. You can have the direct experience on your own through direct experience, through practice, through meditation, through living in non-duality, through living in kindness, compassion, forgiveness. And if you don't live in those things, you got no thing. You got nothing. Not no thing, I should say. No thing is me not clinging to what I believe in for the sake of getting what I want or believing that I am right. All my thoughts are based in, you know, self-righteousness. All my thoughts are. Thoughts are things, and things are motivated by many different aspects of influence, emotional influence, and therefore my thoughts are not very helpful. It is only when I am willing not to have thoughts, when I am willing not to go to thought, when I am willing not to live from thought, when I am willing not to live from emotionality, that all of that stuff caves in and I can find the meaning and the significance of my own presence in this world. Students come to me week after week and day after day struggling with the idea of why isn't this working? How come I haven't changed? Why do I keep doing the same things I always do? Because we are addicted to our comfort. We are addicted to the idea of security. We're addicted to the idea that we should have a better life or that there is a bad life. And if we don't do this, a bad life will ensue. And we have all these ideas and superstitions. And as long as I live in the superstitious kind of silly mentality that most of us suffer from due to the neglect of our spirituality, we never got into it, we never explored it. There's nothing anyone can do. As I said to Stuart, you have to be sick of your own sickness, Ron. You can live who you are. You can find out who you are. You really can. You can also change who you are in many different ways. You can go from one perspective of an idea of yourself to another, but that won't help. Don't change. Transform. Become new. Become whole. Become real. And if you do those things through your practice, you will change everything in your life. And I mean everything. It can be done by any of us at any given moment. I hope that helped. I really do. It's a great question. Thank you, Ron. Thank you for listening. Please forgive me. Namaste. Well, that's it for our program today. I'll be on again tomorrow with more wonderful questions. And if you have a question or a comment you would like me to use, please send me a little email. It says at the top, contact. Just click on that. Send me an email. I'd love to hear from you. I really, really would. It would mean a great deal to me. Have a wonderful day. Please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.